Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and Happy New Year. This is Coach Chat Radio. I'm Lori Lawson, and my fantastic co-host is...
Hi, thanks, Lori. It's Bernie Siegel calling in from Greenwich Village.
Yeah, he came back for the snow, so we'll see what's going to be happening here. So let me tell you a little bit about Coach Chat. We're still hoping that if you change your perspective, you can change your life. Coach Chat was developed for coaches and those interested in one of the fastest growing professions in the world today. We hook you up with some of the world's leading coaches who share their expertise and give you tips and takeaways for expanding and improving your life and your business. And today we have Shefali Reyna. Shefali, welcome to Coach Chat.
Lori and Bernie, thank you so much for having me on the show. It is such a pleasure to be here.
We are thrilled. We are thrilled. Let me tell you a little bit about Shefali, and then we are going to pepper her with questions. Shefali Reyna coaches senior executives on leadership and high performance. She's an ICF certified professional coach, a neuroscience geek, those are her words, not mine, and prior to coaching, spent 20-plus years working in management consulting and financial services, where she delivered success in senior advisory, to senior advisory, and C-level leadership roles in New Delhi, Manila, Tokyo, and now New York City. Shefali's coached C-level leaders, managing directors, asset managers, Wall Street traders, and entrepreneurs, and has been quoted in many publications, including Fast Company, Entrepreneur, Business Insider, and Institutional Investor. So we can't wait to find out how Shefali got here. So, Bernie, take it away.
All right. So welcome and Happy New Year to both of you also.
Thank you.
Our listeners are always curious, interested in knowing a little bit about the journey of our guests, you know, how they became a coach, since no one's born a coach and almost nobody has gone to college for coaching. So we'd love to hear a little bit, briefly about your journey and story into becoming an executive coach.
Yeah, sure. As you were doing the intro, Lori, and I was thinking about all those, things in my journey, what struck me was I feel so privileged that as an executive coach today, I get to lean on all of those different things, just like we all do. And that 20 years of deep business experience, when I was going through it, not knowing that I would come here, has been so valuable. That leadership experience in management consulting, in financial services, and also the whole interest in neuroscience, getting to lean into that. And then really being able to do this work that I'm so passionate about, which is helping executives succeed, exponential success. That's how I think about it. It feels like it's been a really long time, this journey, in the making. I grew up in India, and I began my career more than 20 years ago. I spent these first two decades of my career really on the deep in the business side. I worked with Fortune 50 organizations like Anderson, Deloitte, Lehman Brothers. And the first 10 years I spent in the consulting side in client-facing roles. So again, all about the business. And the last 10 years I spent in financial services in leadership roles in the C-suite, in the later part of it. And, looking back, I loved all of it. And I was surrounded by incredibly smart people. These industries usually have very driven, knowledge-driven, high-achieving executives and professionals, and also experienced amazing leaders. I myself got to be in those senior leadership roles as well. And, as much as I learned about the strategy, about finance, about operations, execution, and all of those inner workings of organizations that you do when you make these journeys, one thing really, stands out for me. And that stood out, I would say, really in the early stages of my career in consulting. As an early consultant, you get in front and center in front of, senior leaders right from the beginning. And I noticed that, two executives, two leaders who may have very similar cognitive ability. So they really smart, analytical, good decisions, but still they could have such different levels of effectiveness. And this was really, you know, for me, it was like, how can this happen? You know, what makes them different in terms of how they are managing themselves? You know, how are they communicating with these teams? How are they standing out as leaders? How are they focusing on impact? All of this, you know, I noticed was creating such different success trajectories for them. That was something that struck me so deeply that it created this interest in all of those, you know, what is called like the emotional and social elements of leadership. So in leadership and, you know, high performance, the science of people. And that interest starting all those years ago stayed with me through these 20 years. And, you know, to make a long story short, a few years ago, you know, as much as fun I was having in these careers and, you know, as you mentioned, traveling all over the world, while being in all these different jobs, I started to introspect, you know, as we all do, in terms of, do I want to do this for the rest of my life, or do I want to do, you know, take on another adventure? And I realized that the fundamental fuel of all of the success that I had was really helping senior leaders succeed, you know, that figuring out how they can have more impact, how can we develop an edge, and then seeing all of that impact, you know, translate to the teams, translate to the organization, translate to results, and just, you know, realize that that was going to be my next adventure, the next part of my journey. And so I went to IPEC, you know, got credentialed, got the accreditation from International Coach Federation. And today I have this privilege of being a trusted go-to executive coach for Wall Street executives. I love partnering with executives on leadership, on high performance, on creating success. And I also now today get to have this amazing conversation with both of you. So, you know, it's been fabulous.
And we get to pick your brain and find out how you're doing it. Fantastic. So let me ask you, you obviously are a believer of trickle-down theory. You want to start at the top and, you know, have management, you know, coach you or bring down whatever qualities they have to build teams and leaders. Is that your philosophy?
I would not say that that is my philosophy. I would say that it would be both trickle down, but also the grassroots bottoms up movement. I think this is more about me optimizing for joy, right? So it's we all get to pick a lane where we play best at and where we enjoy the most. And for me, this was, you know, because it combines all of my interests and all of my passions and what I feel I'm best at. So it's not to say the other piece is not equally important. It's just where my passion was is where I went.
Okay, yeah, no, I love that theory because there are people who see it on both sides. You know, it's like, oh, maybe if you get it, it'll infuse itself up or it'll infuse itself down. But I think a nice, healthy balance, like you said. Have you coached in these other places, or did you concentrate on coaching when you got to America?
I coached in various other roles that I had. You know, so when you're in those senior director roles, and when you're in like the chief of staff type of role, you get the opportunity to work with different types of leaders. And, you know, you infuse your work, if you're especially passionate about it, you know, as you're having impact with different types of coaching. But, you know, what we in, let's say, the ICF definition called coaching was really something that I've done here in New York City.
Oh, cool. So I'm thinking, you mentioned a little while ago about working with some, you know, really smart people, and oftentimes when I hear that from, let's say, HR in an organization, and they're stressing how smart they are, I say, uh-oh, I'm waiting for the shoe to drop. Because I found, just anecdotally, that the really smart people oftentimes have big challenges in terms of social skills, emotional intelligence. What are you finding in when you're working with these senior level people in terms of what some of their challenges are?
So you know, to your earlier point, I feel that that's what coaching used to be about. You know, exactly what you said is that, hey, we got the senior leader, you know, incredibly smart, really good at delivering results, but now we got to make them figure out the people thing, so let's get a coach and fix the problem. You know, it almost feels like that was something that was probably more, was much more common, I think, also in, you know, the in my industry, financial services prior. But increasingly, Bernie, I'm seeing a dramatic shift in terms of switching from this remedial to really coaching being perceived like game elevation, right? So there is this whole thing about, you know, are you going to, you know, have the senior executive? And every one of us, right? So some of us might be extremely great at social skills and relationship skills, but deficient in terms of big picture thinking and, you know, unbiased decision making. And some of us might be very good analytically, you know, depending on our origin story and depending on how we got there, what the journey was. But each of us, even when we are already, let's say, reasonably balanced, you know, so not like your point was, hey, is there a specific consistent type of challenge? I think even reasonably balanced, when you get to those leadership roles, you kind of somehow have to check all of the boxes in some ways, right, with your game face on. Even when you're reasonably balanced, how do you stay on top of your game, right? How do you keep working on being more effective? How do you get out of the reactivity of the day-to-day, deal-to-deal, meeting-to-meeting, you know, near-term thinking, and kind of focus on, okay, where, what matters most, right? How do, so I think to your point, I am not seeing that, oh, this is the typical model where he's extremely smart, analytical, but deficient in people skills. I am seeing, you know, smart, successful, reasonably okay, you know, with different types of people, because a lot of these teams are similarly trained, so it's easier to drive them. But then how do I, you know, sustainably show up at the best performance as a leader? And so we work on all of those pieces to see where do you want to focus and then move forward from there.
Okay,
great. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
I'm going to piggyback on that and ask, who determines what, you call yourself a leadership and a high performance coach. How do you determine high performance? Who defines that? Is it a cooperative thing that you and the leader do? Or how do you determine, oh, this is high and this is low?
So, you know, this is one of those words, right, that means different mm-hmm. things to different people. I would say that, you know, just as a broader spectrum, you know, as a leadership and high-performance coach, what do I think of me, right, as a role? And then I'll tell you about the high-performance element. I really think of myself as this partner for you, the executive coach and the leader. And we are going to focus together on these three things. The first thing we're going to focus on is how do we get you to be more effective? This is the traditional part that everybody talks about, right? Usually in the leader spectrum, how do you communicate better? How do you, you know, have better executive presence? How do you build relationships? How do you manage teams? How do you manage stakeholders? How do you have difficult conversations, right? So that spectrum. But then the second piece is how do we enhance your impact, which is all of those other aspects. You know, how do we make sure you focus on what matters most, that you keep your long-range thinking, that you, you know, make sure you unbias yourself in terms of decision-making. You keep your eye on the ball, right? You see patterns, so more of the cognitive thinking approach. And then the third piece is what I call high performance, which is how do we get you to your highest performance on a sustainable basis. And what that means to me is really this concept of, you know, that our leadership of others must begin with our leadership of us. That how can we show up, you know, on a consistent basis, day in, day out, despite all the things that are happening at our best level? And then how can we expand our skills and our mindset, you know, and our kind of ability to control our thoughts, our emotions, our, you know, volatility, build resilience, build focus, move ourselves to cognition, you know, time and again, whenever, you know, whereas high stakes environment stuff is happening. So just basically being on a sustainable basis at our best performance. So there is no other benchmark. There is no A versus B situation in this high performance context. It's really me, you know, the leader versus how they can show up at their best level. And, you know, a very easy way to understand that is, so let's say you ask a leader, right? So you know when you are at your best. So everybody knows, right? Those moments when we are feeling amazing, you know, performing brilliantly. And then you ask how often, you know, in an average, on average, do you show up at your best, right? Is it 20%? Is it 30%? You know, and then how can we get that, just that personal barometer, how can we get that to you being able to show up at your best, you know, not feeling stressed, not feeling frustrated, not feeling reactive on a sustainable basis?
So wow. I'm going to switch gears completely, because in the last couple of weeks, issues, certain challenges have come up with my clients, and also many of them in financial services, and controversial, the Me Too movement. And I'm finding that men and women, I have both sexes, are talking about this more, and they're talking about it in a way of stress, which is one of my colleagues from Goldman Sachs said, it's not fun anymore, no one talks in the office. And I said, oh, how come no one talks? We're afraid to say anything and offend anybody. And so I'm just going to throw this out to you is, again, I'm anecdotally, but I'm finding it's becoming more of a topic with my clients, sort of a discomfort and how they're supposed to behave with people of the opposite or same sex. Have you seen any of that yet in your work?
I will say that all of these things that happen, right, these general stories, they do happen on the fringes. But, you know, one thing that I in my own experience, right, as a woman in, you know, all levels of roles in financial services have experienced is that what I've loved about the industry is that it's so incredibly meritocratic, you know, in a way that maybe other industries may not be. I don't know, you know, because I don't have that personal experience. But I've seen that when we consistently and sustainably, you know, are just showing up professionally and doing our job, relationships are good, and the opportunities and the, you know, and the career progression and the new roles will happen. We just have to keep staying kind of resiliently in the game, you know, whether we are male or we are female. You know, when something like this happens, right, for example, the Me Too movement, and, you know, and definitely it goes without saying that this is an incredible platform where women who felt who didn't have a voice before now have a voice. But we also almost, and I know all of us, right, feel this way, is we also don't want to overgeneralize and do, you know, this is a male versus female thing. We don't want to look at this concept without, you know, understanding the context that most people in organizations, male or female, you know, are well-intentioned and they want to do well for themselves. They want to, you know, have good relationships. They want to progress their careers and they want to create a successful organization. Most male leaders are incredible leaders. You know, they are well-intentioned. In my own career, I can tell you that all of my success, you know, has been enormously supported by, you know, this is a male-dominated industry, people around me, and I am, you know, female, and I was, you know, immigrant, brown, you know, all of, you can, whatever you throw at it, right, all of that was me, so, and I never experienced any of the, you know, the constraints, let's say, that, you know, might happen. So that's my personal experience. But without saying anything else, right, the two things in terms of just how the brain works, there is going to be bias because our brains are set up for bias, right? We are wired for bias from an evolutionary perspective. We like people who are like us. You know, we like people who look like us, who talk like us. You know, so people even in one industry think a certain way about people in the other industry. You know, people maybe. So it's just, you know, it's one of those natural things. And when organizations give us training, we understand that bias better. That, hey, I don't even know, right? I don't think I'm, you know, I'm well-intentioned. I didn't even know I had that subconscious bias. And then second is this concept of abuse of power. So abuse of power has happened for hundreds and thousands of years, right? So when people are powerful, whether they're male, whether they're female, there are instances, right? There is probably some stats. I don't have those. But in terms of people will abuse power, and they will abuse power in different ways. So it's, so, you know, as much as I support, you know, women having a voice in this process, I also support championing that people in general have good intentions. They are good. They want to work together. They want to help each other. And we don't want to put ourselves in this adversarial situation just in the interest of overgeneralization. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think?
Well, it's fascinating. Certainly coming into the fore, and as I said, I just recently I've had men and women both sort of complaining to me and scratching their heads, saying, "Well, what do I do?" And so it's an interesting topic that is in the forefront. So thank you for that explanation.
Yeah, and I think if you stay center and like you say, you show up wanting to do a good job. My thought is you can have fun no matter where you are. But I don't know. I'm on both sides.
I know it's a difficult one to answer, right? Yes, it's a difficult one to answer because they're so complex. And you know when we're forced to almost think of them in simple terms, it dilutes what's going on. So I get the sensitivity, Bernie, that you mentioned. With that person, that people will feel threatened, right? Again, that's how the brain works. When one people are saying that, hey, you are the bad guys, and you're like, hey, I'm not the bad guy, and now I have to be careful. So those things will happen, but then I feel they'll neutralize over time if we just deal with it responsibly.
Yeah, I see it as a pendulum. For many years, it was on one side, and now it's swung, all to the other, and I think it'll eventually even itself out and sort of hang in the middle, I hope. But you did mention like neuroscience and a bit about the brain and stuff. How do you use that in your coaching?
Yeah. So, I'm a keen student of neuroscience, and I really think of it in simple terms. But as coaches, right, our work is really to help the client achieve results. Now, the question is, how do we do that, right? So we do that by making changes in perspective, shifting behavior. We are changing people's mindset. We are adding, helping them add to their skill set. We are creating insight. And we are, at the end of the day, helping them achieve goals and create sustainable behavior change. And each of these things that I mentioned are all driven by the way our brains function. So the way I, came to neuroscience was from that premise that there is so much research that is going on, at this time in terms of how different parts of the brain work as it can apply to our behavior, right, as it can apply to our habits. And I love using all of this research in terms of, how do we build habits, how do we manage stress, how can we build relationships, how can we strengthen our focus. How can we build resilience so that we are more kind of self-sustaining? I think it's three things, right? So one is I love, with these types of analytical, knowledge-driven clients that, and that's also me, by the way, I am, made similarly, explaining how things work is extremely helpful. So when we can talk about, this is the threat response system. So every time there's a high-stakes situation, these are the things that happen in your brain. These are the things that happen in your body, right? This is what gets us stressed. This is how your existing habit works, right? Habit structure, habit loops, and this is how they're created in the system, in, reward systems. This is how neuroplasticity works. What I realize is that just explaining that creates a sense of, this is less personal, right? So this is not just about me going through all of this. This is about how our brains work. And so it creates this empowerment that I have the agency, right, to shift things. The second thing is the way it helps us is in that relationship is that we're building frameworks, right? How do I approach something? So many times, having a simple framework, using all of this great science, and not just neuroscience, but let's say even, psychology and anthropology, whatever, but in terms of evidence-based approaches, we can say that this is how we build a habit. So when you want to create a new habit, let's do all of these 10 things. Let's experiment with these steps, and then let's move forward and see how that goes. What I find is that framework becomes very usable, by the client, even after our work, has ended, because they can take it with them to the world, in their future lives and use them as they see fit. Just like a simple example I will give you around neuroplasticity. So everybody talks about this word, but simply it's really that the brain changes whether we want it to or not, right? So there's changes in the brain all the time. When I was growing up, when, you know, most of my clients were growing up, we were born, like we were taught that we are just born with these traits. And now we just have to kind of live our lives, right, with these traits. Now science is showing us that, you know, if we do the repetitions, if we do those reps, we can, you know, we can physiologically, structurally change our brain, and things that feel hard can now get on autopilot. So even, you know, having that as a concept, knowing that that's what the research is showing, creates so much commitment from the client, because we are now not in a conversation saying, hey, you know, Lori, Bernie, you got to just do more practice, right? Keep doing this. Now there is this understanding that if I do the reps, this will start feeling like autopilot, and you can self-assess. So over time, you get a sense of, oh, I'm feeling more comfortable doing this. I want to do the reps because I know this is going to actually, you know, wire into my brain. Have you guys, you know, do you both like using some concepts in neuroscience as well?
Not me. No, emotional intelligence maybe, but not me.
That was a great explanation of neuroscience. Sometimes I just call it brain science. And I find that clients perk up because it's not just Bernie's thought. It's objective. It takes the personal out of it. And I may say to a client, if you're more interested, Google search, which brings me to another question, which I ask oftentimes, which is technology, the impact of technology today, what's been going on in the workplace with people with their phones that, you know, seem to be completely addicted, and you know what the benefits and the positives and negatives are. Well, what are you seeing with your clients? That oftentimes I'm seeing and reading that clients are struggling with it, and they actually do ask for help now because they'll say, "Oh, it was such a long day, and I don't think I got anything done." Because they were so busy texting and emailing and all the other things, Instagramming and whatever else. So what are your thoughts about technology in the workplace today?
Yeah. You know, so it's you know, to your point, it's like these two sides of the coin, right? One is that we are in this unprecedented age of technology. We have the world's best ideas, you know, the best information, the best people at our fingertips just through the you know, by using this technology. So it's almost like a really exciting time. So much is happening in the technology space. But having said that, we also have these brains that are, you know, mostly evolved in the Stone Ages and which are extremely, you know, vulnerable to energy draining, you know, overconsumption, the potential addiction of, you know, comparing like on social media and all of the things that eventually result in anxiety and in stress, and studies are showing that. So what I'm finding with my clients is, you know, yes, you know, many don't even realize the amount of time we spend, you know, in front of our screens, whether working or just getting news or, you know, all of those things. But once there's a realization that, oh my gosh, you know, I'm spending 50, 60% of my day in front of a screen, and out of that, 30% or 40% was actually not essential. It wasn't fun. It was just, you know, habit loops, right? It was just, I went on autopilot, I got sucked in, I Google searched something, and then 40 minutes later, I was on the Wikipedia page or something else, right? And I have no idea how that happened. Mm-hmm. So once we realize that, and we realize that this is vulnerability, but, you know, we kind of almost ask the question, do we want to use a device, or do we want a device to use us? And if you choose that, you know, I want to use my device, I love technology, and now I just have to build a structure where I'm noticing when I'm getting sucked into it and I'm pulling myself back, I feel the balance becomes very empowering.
Yeah, I fear, and I know Bernie and I have had this conversation a million times, I just fear that I think it's too far gone. I don't think people know how to operate without a phone in their hands right now. And I fear about communication, you know, face-to-face, person-to-person. I think it's becoming a lost art, which is sad. You know, I admit the technology is astronomically wonderful, but I don't know where the people are. Where's all the people? But
well, I walk down the streets and I feel like it looks like zombies, because everyone is I guess it's tacit approval that everyone should have the phone in their hand staring at it while they're walking, you know, down the street. And I don't know where that began, but it seems to be okay to do it. It's kind of bizarre, and I have to keep from laughing sometimes at some of the things that you see. But I do think it gets in the way of many people's productivity because they are addicted and they don't know how to stop.
Yes.
I got to cut you guys off because we're almost out of time, and I want people to know how, Shefali, how can people find you?
Yes, so people can find me on my website, which is shefalireyna.com, and of course they can find me on LinkedIn. You know, my name is probably like one of the few Shefali Reynas in the world, so it's rather easy to Google me.
Let me spell it for them, S-H-E-F-A-L-I. And then Reyna, R-A-I-N-A. Shefali Reyna, we have had a great time with you, and we could go on for hours, but I don't think we have the time on our bandwidth. So I'm going to wish everybody a Happy New Year once again and say we will see you next time. Thank you so much, Shefali, for being on
thank
our radio
so
show.
Thank you. I had so
both.
Much fun.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye.
Bye.